Welcome to another inspirational podcast from Nations Church. For more great content and updates, visit nationschurch.com.
The word? Yeah. Let's pray. Holy Spirit, help. Help me, Lord. Help me to speak your words and to portray your heart. In Jesus' mighty name. Amen. Hey, I don't know about you, but it just seems that the world that we live in right now is just full of distractions. You're constantly bombarded by advertising, by all these different distractions that want to get your attention. And everything seems to be vying for our buy-in, yeah? And car companies, I mean, honestly, they're constantly hitting you with ads on TV, how you've got to have the latest car with the latest gadgets, the latest gizmos, or otherwise you're Josiah Amos who's telling me I need to do an ECM burn on my Hilux so it goes better. Or there's phone companies, right? Who, in fact, if you're an Apple ID owner, you will get bombarded with emails saying you need to come to the latest Apple event because you've got to buy the latest Apple phone. So you're constantly getting these distractions and then there's this thing called active listening. Who's been caught out with active listening on their phone? Do you know what active listening is? Okay, you ready? Active listening. Christine and I have been having conversations, and our phone's nearby us, and because we would like to move house or somewhere in and around Scarborough. So every time I go onto Instagram, every second picture that comes up is about building, builders, house buying, real estate, and it circles around Scarborough. I kid you not, your phones are listening to you. And the other one is I recently busted my Garmin. It's a sports watch which I use for running and cycling and swimming, and it keeps your heart rate, keeps your rhythm and all that sort of thing. All of a sudden, Garmin ads start coming up on my Instagram feed. I kid you not, it's like distractions, right? They're trying to get your attention, and we are living in a time where distractions constantly grab us. Then there's family and friends. You know, friends who say, hey, why don't we just go and spend hours playing COD? Or I'm preaching to you, youth, young adults. Or there's the, you know, come and spend time at our house. And good distractions. Family time is good. That's fine. But then there's, parents. You know what I'm talking about. Kids. Come on, Matt. Constantly nagging you, right? Dad, can you do this? Dad, can you do that? Dad, can you do this? It's like they constantly distract you. Or then there's that one where husbands, you know what it's like. You're sitting down watching your favorite sporting program and your wife goes, honey, and you just know right then and there you've been distracted from your favorite sport program. I know, I've got to be careful with that one. What about when you sit down and have your devotion time? And you just want to spend time in the Word of God. And what happens? Your mind starts to travel. And you get distracted because it's so easy to just start wandering. I kid you not, if I lay down on the bed and I start to pray, within 2 or 3 minutes, I'm asleep. Because it's like I have to get distracted with my position right now, which is just relaxed and rested. So if I want to be active in prayer, I've got to get up and move around. It's easy to get distracted, isn't it? You know, when we come to church, we want to worship, you know. And so, yep, the worship leaders up here, and then they're encouraging us. We want to get into the worship, and hands are raised, and, oh, gee, that barbecue smells good. Oh, what are we doing for after church? Or what's happening? What's so-and-so? What do they think of me right now when I'm raising my hands? And our mind just gets caught in this constant distraction, doesn't it? We're constantly captured by distractions. But then there's good distractions, like being distracted for the things of God, being distracted to step out and do the things that he's calling us to do. Good distractions, right? And then there's, the distraction to maybe you walk into a shop and God says, why don't you share the gospel with that person? That's a good distraction. Distractions can be good, or maybe there's that distraction that kind of keeps us from getting into a dangerous situation. That's a good distraction. So distractions can be both good and bad. And the question I want to ask you today is this. Are you being distracted for pleasure or for purpose? Are you being caught with your own selfish, centered distraction, or are you being distracted for the purpose that God's actually got you on the plan for? What distraction gets most of your attention? Are you more inclined to allow distractions that are seemingly our own desires and our own wants and our own needs, or are we allowing the distractions that God's putting in our life to dominate our thoughts and our understanding? Are we allowing the distractions of God to draw us into His presence, spend time with Him, hear from Him, and step out into what God's called to do? In John chapter 4, we come upon an account of Jesus when He's speaking to the woman at the well. Now, you could be forgiven for right here thinking that Jesus is actually being distracted from His ultimate purpose and plan, because He's in a place where culturally He probably shouldn't be. One, He's talking to a woman, which you just didn't do back then. And forgive me, this is culturally contextual. It's okay now in day and age. It's okay. We're allowed to talk to women right now. It's okay. But not only was He talking to a woman, but He was talking to a Samaritan woman. Jews did not mix with Samaritans. And I'm sorry, but a rabbi does not talk to a Samaritan woman. And you could be forgiven thinking, is Jesus being distracted right now for the right purposes? Is He actually on track? Is he doing what God's called Him to do? This just was not the done thing. So we're going to pick it up in verse 27, and we're going to read the account after Jesus has finished talking with the woman, and she puts her buckets down and runs back to the city. And we're going to pick up in verse 27, it says this: just then His disciples came back. They were shocked to find Him talking to a woman, but none of them had the actual nerve to ask Him, "What do you want with her?" or "Why are you talking to her?" The woman left her water jar beside the well and ran back to the village, telling everyone, "Come see a man who told me everything I ever did." That'd be a pretty awesome moment. Could He possibly be the Messiah? So look at this. So the people came streaming from the village to see Him. Meanwhile, the disciples were urging Jesus, "Rabbi, eat something." But Jesus replied, "I have a kind of food you know nothing about." "Did someone bring Him food while they were gone?" the disciples asked each other. And Jesus explained, "My nourishment comes from doing the will of God who sent me and from finishing His work. You know the saying, 4 months between planting and the harvest. But I say to you, wake up, look around, the fields are already ripe for harvest." Smack bang in the middle of the passage, there is a key moment the disciples would have missed if Jesus hadn't pointed it out. You know, Jesus he skips lunch just so He could share a moment with this Samaritan woman to share the gospel, and then He switches to have a key discipleship moment with the disciples, a key teaching moment that is so easily missed if we just read it for just the story that is before our eyes. And right before them was the opportunity to expand the kingdom, and they almost missed it simply because they were distracted by their own pleasure rather than for godly purposes. They allowed their perception of the situation, or the lack of, to determine the outcome, and almost missed the opportunity to expand the kingdom. Can I put it to you? So often there is no lack of opportunity, only a lack of perception. Opportunity is right before you, but it's your perception. Is your perception on track? Are you seeing it for what God's got? See, the disciples were caught in their own bigotry and racism and were more concerned as to why Jesus was talking to a woman to what was actually before their eyes. Even more so, they were more consumed with filling their stomach with lunch than worrying about what was actually going on and seeing what was before them. And here's what makes it even worse. They even tried to distract Jesus by urging Him to have something to eat. They don't care about what's going on. They go, "Jesus, eat." All they're thinking about is what's in their lunchbox. Jesus goes, "You don't get it, guys. You can't see it. I have food you don't even know anything about." You see, Jesus was using the distraction moment to teach them that there was something far more important, far more pleasurable, far more purposeful in that moment, and that was to preach the gospel, to be distracted for purpose rather than pleasure. They needed to lift their eyes up, as it were, and see the plan for the distraction that was actually coming right before them. Right before them, the fields were white unto harvest, but they were too busy looking in their lunchbox. They needed to shift their perception and understand the opportunity that was right before them. So how did he do this? How does he switch their understanding? How does he change their perception? How does Jesus get them to get away from gazing, navel gazing as it were, looking in their lunch pails, thinking about their own stomachs? How does he shift it? And we catch this in verse 35 where he says this, "You know the saying, 4 months between planting and harvest, but I say to you, wake up, look around, the fields are already white, ripe for harvest." Now, Jesus uses this old Jewish saying about the fields being ripe under harvest. And you know, we're not farmers here. We don't understand or necessarily participate in the whole process of sowing and reaping. And in the natural sense, you put grain in the ground, and then, of course, you wait for it to grow. You wait for the germination process with rain and with the soil, and of course, it grows. And then in 4 months' time, harvest occurs. And Jesus is using this to kind of get them to switch their eyes and switch their understanding. Can I put it to you this? Jesus was trying to teach them, guys, you don't need to wait for harvest. It's right in front of you. But can I put it to you like this? So often we live our lives with this perception, the harvest can wait. The harvest can wait. I don't need to be active with the gospel. I don't need to sow even. I don't need to plant because, oh, the harvest, you know, it'll happen when it'll happen. I don't need to worry about actually investing in it because that's someone else's job. We live our lives with this concept of the harvest can wait. We go about our Christian journey distracted with the pleasures of life and an attitude of, it's all good. The harvest will come when it comes. I don't need to be active in the process. We don't need to worry about it. We've got time. We don't need to be ready. We don't need to do anything about it. When the reality is, Jesus is saying these words, guys, you can't see it. Revival's now. The heart of Jesus is revival's now. The heart of Jesus says, I have made the fields white unto harvest. Pray that the Lord of the harvest would send workers. We need workers. He's saying, don't wait 4 months for the harvest. Step into it now. It can only happen if we lift our eyes up and put aside the distractions that cause us to get off track. Can I put it to you like this? Nations Church, we don't need to be so worried about what's in our lunch boxes that we miss the opportunity that's right before our eyes, that the harvest's field is ready to go. We've got to stop thinking about our own pleasures and our own things. Guys, I don't want this to be a condemnation message. That's not the point. The point is this. Let's get off the distractions that keep us away from the presence of God. Let's get off the distractions that take us away from the purposes of God. And let's see, lift your eyes up. The fields are wine to harvest. Honestly, we are at a point in history. We are at a point in history. Never before have there been so many Christians on the face of the earth. But never before has there been such an urgency to spread the word. You know, we have some 2,500 people who call Nations Church home. Never before has Nations Church had so much opportunity to be effective with the gospel. But here's the thing. It's great to have lots of people, but if lots of people aren't active, what's the point? We're entering a season as a church as we focus on others. It's one of our eight cultures. We are about others, reaching them with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Christmas is just around the corner. But here's the reality. What am I going to get for Christmas? Oh, you know, I can think about buying that thing, or I can think about doing this. I can think about filling my own pleasure. When we've got an opportunity right before us where we can wrap and pack some baskets and give to community families, where we've got an opportunity that says we can come together and we can invest into people's lives, let's not get distracted with things that are temporal. Let's not get distracted with things that are not going to last. What does it profit a man that he gain the whole world, yet lose his soul? We have a divine opportunity to reach more people for the gospel than any other time in history. The church is bigger than it's ever been before, and that is good. But having lots of us is good, but having lots of us doing the will of the Father, that's even better. So how do we do this? How can we learn to be distracted for purpose rather than being distracted for pleasure? Well, it starts with a simple instruction that Jesus gave his disciples. You see, soul winning is a part of the discipleship journey, but it may mean that we have to skip lunch occasionally. It may mean that we need to skip that temporal pleasure that we might otherwise think that's more important. Maybe it's an interruption to your routine. Maybe it means coming late sometime because you spent that moment with that person. Now, I've got to tell you, that one speaks to me. If you ask my wife, I'm not on time. I'm early everywhere. But sometimes, you know what? I probably just need to stop being early and take those moments and think, I need to spend that time with that person. I need to spread the word, the message of hope. Maybe it'll cost you something. Maybe it'll cost you some finances. I'll just leave that one there. Maybe it's time to pull away from our phone or our tablet when we catch the train to work and engage in conversation with the person sitting next to us. Maybe it's as you're walking down the street, and I'm guilty of this too, and you see that person, they look lost, they look empty. Maybe I just need to say hello and just engage with them. It's going to cost you a little bit of discomfort. Is that a good thing? Certainly it is. There's a really good advertisement right now. I don't know if you've seen this one. It's a bus trip where there's a little fella and he's got this little bar of chocolate. And he turns to his mum, can I have some? And she's like, no. And then he turns and he sees the girl crying. And he sits there and looks at his chocolate, unwraps it. And you think at first with his unwrapping he's going to get in trouble because he's unwrapping it, but he reaches out and gives it to the girl. And she stops for a moment and the tears kind of stop and she takes a piece of chocolate and mum says, yes, she can have a piece. What a great picture of pausing, taking away the pleasure that's in front of him and purposefully giving of what he had, which was his to have, but he gave. The gospel's the same, guys. We hold on to the very thing that in our hands, and we often think, this is for me. I'll hold that. That's just for me. No. The gospel was given to you to give out. The gospel was given you to spread. The gospel was given you to break off that piece of chocolate and hand it to the person, because the pleasure comes in them receiving. Do you know what? You then get the pleasure too. Did you see the mum gave the kid his piece of chocolate? He got the pleasure at the end as well. Jesus says, you don't know the food I have. The food I comes from doing the will of the Father. He gets sustained and filled by doing the will of the Father. We got the same coming. And this is what Jesus is asking us to do. And this is the point. Lift up your eyes. It's all we have to do. Wake up and look around you. Jesus wasn't concerned with temporal pleasures. His concern was the white fields of the people that were flooding from the city, of being told, is this the Messiah? Can I tell you that right now people are more spiritually starved and hungry than they've ever been in history? Honestly, go start talking to people about spiritual things. Really? Tell me, did that happen? People want to hear about it. The spiritual is actually something that people have an appetite for. Yet we're afraid and we think to ourselves, oh, no, they don't want to hear it. Yes, they do. Yes, they do want to hear about it. Jesus wasn't distracted with the contents of the lunchbox. His distraction was the fields of people that were streaming before him. As with the woman with the issue of blood who touched his cloak, he stops. He was on a mission. He was about to go and heal Jairus' daughter. So he stops and he goes, who touched me? It cost him time. It cost the perception of the people in that moment that the girl dies. But he stopped for that moment and invested in someone. He still healed the girl. She raised her from the dead. Or earlier in that same chapter in the book of Luke, he crossed the sea, as we heard from Pastor Richard last week, where he went on a journey through a storm to meet one man who was the demon-possessed man on the other side of the lake, who then, we hear, went and spread the gospel across Decapolis, which again was multiple cities. And we don't know how much effect that actually had by going and seeing the one and then came back over to his normal town. Or is it stopping and lifting your eyes and seeing a Zacchaeus in the tree and saying, Zacchaeus, come down today, I'll come and have a meal at your house, and change the course and the destiny of someone's life by simply lifting your eyes and seeing what's right in front of you. We need to lift our eyes and shift our perspective. Our perspective can't be based on what's in our lunchbox. It's got to be based on the harvest that is right before us and what could be in our hands. Will it cost me? Potentially. Maybe a little bit of comfort and convenience, maybe some fuel in your car, maybe a late night phone call, maybe even a financial cost. But can I encourage you, when we lift our eyes beyond our own pleasure and our own desire, we begin to see and see the fruit and actually capture what it is that Jesus said when he said, the food that I have, you know nothing of, but I want to tell you the secret. Come on, he gives you the pleasure of being a part of reaping the harvest. There's three things that we can learn from lifting our eyes, and three things that happen when we lift our eyes. The first is this: we awaken to awareness. No longer are we unaware of what's right in front of us. Awareness rises within us, and we begin to see the world through the eyes of Jesus. In the words of Jesus, I have food you know nothing about. No longer captured by our own pleasures, we shift our focus to an awareness of the people around us, not just the awareness of our own selfish desires within. Our awareness gets awakened. An awareness that can change the world around us. The second thing that can happen is we awaken to compassion. You see, compassion is not something for us, it's something for others. Compassion's an outworking. Compassion is something that we give of. And when God awakens the compassion within us, it is unbreakable. What I tell you, what that can do, what that can shift, what that can change, is immeasurable. When you awaken to the compassion that God places within you, no longer do we see the Samaritan woman who I shouldn't be talking to or I shouldn't be mixing with, or that homeless person who is a bit smelly, who's a bit dirty. No. We see with the eyes of Jesus. That's what happens when we awaken to compassion. No longer we do see with the bigotry that the disciples had. We see the crowd coming and going, wow, there's a harvest. I need to bring the gospel of Jesus to that harvest. Compassion stirs up action. Compassion stirs up action. And the third thing that happens is we awaken to urgency. No longer do we say the harvest can wait. The harvest is ready now. Lift up your eyes. The fields are white under harvest. It's not someone else's job. It's my job. The time is not next month. The time is now. The time is not tomorrow. The time is today. The time is not 10 minutes time. The time is now. We awaken to urgency because the gospel is an urgent message that must be spread. What more can we do? Ignite some urgency in your heart. The Apostle Paul puts it like this. In Philippians 2, verses 4 and 5, abandon every display of selfishness. Possess a greater concern for the matters to others instead of your own interests. And consider the example that Jesus, the Anointed One, has set before us. Let his mindset be your motivation. That's powerful. When we put the eyes of Jesus on, we begin to see the world for what it is. In 1998... my family and I were still living in 1997, I should backtrack a little. 1997, we were still living in Brisbane. And we were invited to come back to Perth. We had spent 7 years living in Brisbane, and we were invited to come back to be a part of a youth ministry that was being a church that was being planted in Ballajura. And in part of that planning, we made the decision, well, we need to sell our house up, we need to sell up, and we need to go back to Perth. A noble cause, a noble thing, the purposes and plans of God. We were being distracted for what God had placed on our life, which we felt was the call of God. And as a part of this whole process, we prayerfully sat down and thought, well, we need to sell the house, we need to get our finances in order, we need to pack everything up, we need to do all this. And we put the house on the market, and 6 months go by, and the house isn't selling. We're not getting any buyers coming in. The market had actually plummeted, very much like what happened about 12 months ago in Perth, where the market kind of just bottomed out, where people were losing money in the investment that they had. This is, you know, some 20-odd years ago. And God spoke to me very specifically in a moment when I'm sitting there asking, saying, why is this house not selling? Why can't we get back to Perth? The church is about ready to plant. The people had raised money for us to fly back. They pulled together some finances so that we could put our stuff in a shipping container, send it back. They were being generous and helping us. But why won't the house sell? And God says to me very specifically, yeah, you know what? I do want you to come to Perth. I do want you to do what I've called you to do. But you haven't done what I've asked you to do, and your house is not going to sell until you go next door and share the gospel with your neighbor. And my wife's sitting there going. And I remember balking at it for another 3 months. Awaken to urgency. And God says to me, you going to do it? I kept putting it off. And then we start having discussions about putting the house up for rent. Thinking, oh, we'll just keep the asset. That'd be handy. And Christine looks at me and she goes, you haven't done your job. God spoke to you. Go next door. She wasn't that direct. Go next door and talk to Steve. So it's 5 o'clock, and in Brisbane, of course, in summertime, around that time, it's still quite light, and he was outside watering his garden, I was doing pottering around, and I go outside, and I'm standing in the garden, and I'm like, we start talking, hey Steve, how's the weather, what's happening, chatting away, and we don't get to it, and Steve goes inside his house, I go inside mine. Christine goes, so did you do it? I'm sitting there going, why am I so afraid? Because I'm too concerned about my own comfort, my own pleasure, my own sense of being. I'm worried more about that than I am worried about the perception of being awakened to purpose, being awakened to the urgency, being awakened to the compassion that this guy needs the gospel. So I walk back in the kitchen. Christine goes, have you done it? She goes, go back and knock on the door. Tail between legs. I go in, I knock on the door, and I say, Steve, you got time to chat? Sure. I sit down with him in his lounge room, and very awkwardly, because, I mean, the moment had gone, because it would have been easier outside, and very awkwardly, I just said to him, Steve, has anyone ever spoken to you about the gospel of Jesus? And we had a conversation about the gospel. Now, I'd love to tell you that at that point, he gave his heart to the Lord. He didn't. But God just asked me to do something. You see, our job is not to worry about whether we get a moment or a change or an action right then and there. Ours is to do what God tells us to do, and it was to share the gospel. 3 days later, we got an offer on the house. Seriously, guys, the fields are white to harvest. The fields are wide under harvest. We've just got to step in and do what God's called us to do. Lift our eyes out of our lunchbox.
Thanks for listening to the Nations Church podcast. For more great content and updates, visit nationschurch.com.